Let's hit it. Give me a vacation.
Vacation.
Give me a wave.
Surfing.
Give me a city tour.
The trolley.
Give me animals.
The zoo.
Give me some sea life. Give me museums.
Balboa Park.
Give me a woo.
Roller coaster.
What's that spell?
San Diego.
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your family vacation at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
I'm Johnny B. Good, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
It's Two Dudes in a Kitchen with Tyler Florence
and Wells Adams, an iHeartRadio podcast. That is right. It's time for another episode of Two Dudes in a Kitchen. It's Wells Adams hanging out with you alongside the very talented and dashingly handsome Tyler Florence. How are you, bud?
Well, I'm great, man. You're not so bad yourself.
Thank you.
Mr. Adams, how you doing, buddy? You good?
I'm doing great. You know, we record these in advance. So, by the time this airs, a couple of weeks will have gone by. But this is one of the biggest weeks of my life because I am a golf fan, and this is Masters Week, which is a very important golf tournament to me and my family. And it's funny because, you have brought me into this culinary world vis-a-vis this podcast and through Worst Cooks. You've introduced me to some amazing chefs.
Yeah.
And I think that, I mean, aside from you, the most amazing person in the culinary world that I've met because of you is Jose Andreas.
Yes. We had dinner with him in Austin 2 years ago.
We did.
We sure did. Yeah.
You were like, you know who he is? And I was like, I have no idea. And he's like, oh my God, he is like one of the best chefs in the world, but he also does all this work with
World
Central Kitchen, basically they just go and make food for any place that like really needs help. And like he's really actually changing the world. And the reason why I bring him up during this, the Masters Week, is because a fellow Spaniard of his won the Masters last year, a guy named John Rahm. And when you win the Masters, the next year you have to curate the dinner for the champion's dinner, which happens the Wednesday before the tournament or the Tuesday for the tournament. And Jose Andreas is the one who curated the menu for the Masters. So before we get into this episode, long diatribe and prelude in, if you were to win the Masters, Chef Tyler Florence, what would be on your Masters Champions dinner menu?
Well, and I'm not bragging, right?
Okay.
You get a chance to, being famous and all that, right? Kind of lived a good life from time to time. You get very interesting invitations to go do stuff that feels kind of super rare. I played Augusta National.
And this hurts.
Have we talked about this before? Have we talked about this, right?
And you shot like 208 and
I lost 10 balls. But I had a very, very dashing full, very expensive golf outfit on. I can't remember who it was by, but I went to Barney's and I'm like, I want the best looking golf thing, right?
Yeah.
But Augusta National is very special, right?
It is.
My people are from Augusta. My dad's family grew up outside of a small town called Lincolnton, Georgia, which is just outside of Augusta. And the Augusta National and the Masters Tournament is the biggest thing that happens there. It's just the biggest golf tournament in America. And it's just special. It's very, very, very special. It's a special place, right? So the golf course is closed most of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's only open for a little while, right? And when I was there, I can't remember, it was like Condoleezza Rice was there when I was playing, and I mean, it's just like the world's, you know, most influential people. But it's the South, right? So if you're asking me what I would do, I would have this, because there's a high-low thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Go to Augusta National. And it's kind of one of those things you can't, you can buy a ticket to go watch, but you can't buy a ticket to participate, right? You get selected. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you actually can't buy a ticket to go watch. You have to put yourself in the lottery.
The lottery. Yeah. So it's super rare. But at the end of the day, it's still the South. One of the famous things they're really famous for there is their pimento cheese sandwich.
Yep.
Which is not the greatest pimento cheese sandwich, if I could be perfectly honest with you. It's a little basic.
But it's priced correctly. When you go there, the pimento cheese sandwich, they do not price gouge there. It's $2.
I thought it was $1.50. It's $2?
Maybe it's $1.50. It's nothing.
Something like that. Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. So I would, I'm live streaming this idea. I'd update that recipe because I think it's a little boring. A little more mayonnaise. I think a little more flavor in the roasted peppers, right? A little more cayenne, just kind of give it a little more zing. Maybe slightly better cheese. I'd make it a churched up $5 sandwich.
Okay.
Yeah, because I think people would pay for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I would do.
All right.
When it comes to dinner, right? I think I would start smoking some whole hog, George.
Got to.
Yeah. And I think I would make it about barbecue. And I think it would be really, really special. Cause I think when people that are coming from all over the world to enjoy the Masters, I think walking out with a taste of the South would be important. You got to have sweet tea. You got to have mustard-based barbecue sauce. You got to have good coleslaw. You got to have beans. You got to have potato salad. And I think you got to have just succulent, slow cooked whole hog pork. Boom. That's what I would do.
That was Jordan Spieth's choice for his culinary champions dinner.
Are you going? Are you going this year? Or what?
No, I went last year. And
you went last year.
I would love to go again, but like I get it. It's a once in a lifetime thing. I did it. I would like to play it. So if you ever hit that connect again, you tell your boy.
Okay.
I do want to shift gears a little bit because this is something that I've been seeing a whole lot in my social media feed on TikTok and on Instagram. You know, TikTok is kind of this new place for like people to really kind of air their grievances about things that they don't feel is right. And I've been seeing a lot of people be very upset at a colleague of yours in David Chang, who makes this, spicy chili sauce called Chili Crunch. And he's been drawing a lot of heat over sending cease and desist letters to companies about, officially saying that they're going to try to sue them for kind of doing something similar. And a lot of people on social media are saying, hey, David Chang, you're kind of beating up on the little guy. So in our kind of text thread before we did the episode, I just said, Tyler, what's your thoughts? I'm sure you've worked with this guy before and Food Network and all that kind of stuff. And I wanted to know what you thought of this whole kind of big story that's happening.
Well, it's really interesting, right? Because I am both a small business owner. I'm also a medium business owner. I hold a lot of trademarks. When we come up with a concept, trademarking the name and the intellectual property, what they call IP, intellectual property, is arguably more important than the name itself. Mm. Because, you know, everything has kind of been invented, but your particular slant on it is the difference between you having the right to use it or someone encroaching on your space that you were clever enough to figure out first, that they can kind of come in and start stealing your market share, right?
Yeah.
So I'm a little torn, right? So there's one thing that can feel like, okay, so Chili Crunch, Chili Crisp, and you guys know what we're talking about, right? It's that kind of like yummy chili oil that, and there's so many different variations of this particular recipe, but it's dried chilies, Szechuan peppercorn, a garlic, onion, and both those are dehydrated, and then they're fried. And then so this kind of perfumey, kind of wonderful flavor profile is both this kind of like yummy fat thing that's great on pizza, great on scrambled eggs, but also gives you this kind of wonderful texture because it's crunchy. It's chili crisp or chili crunch, right? This has been around for hundreds of years. And I think this is where the tear comes from. It's because how can you trade? Yeah. You can't trademark mayonnaise. You can't trademark ketchup. You can't trademark mustard. Now, but you can trademark Miracle Whip. Right. because it's neither one, right? And or there's a company called Just that trademarked an eggless vegan mayonnaise, right? But then they got sued because they called it mayonnaise and it's not mayonnaise because it's got no eggs in it, right? So it's kind of interesting. So anyway, so because I'm so deep in this, because literally, you know, as a guy who's, you know, I have, I don't know, four or five different companies that I manage right now. All of them I started from scratch and all of them I trademarked, right? So who I want to pipe in on this, because I think you and I could just talk about what we read. I want to get like a real professional involved in this. So I asked my trademark attorney from New York City, Sebastian Lovero Riso, who is a partner at Lattice and Perry out of New York City, to come on and kind of give us some insight on what it means. I was asking three simple questions. What is a trademark? How do you get a trademark? And I think the most important thing is how do you defend a trademark? And I think that's where David Chang is at right now. And I see his side of it. So if he has a trademark on Chili Crisp, the question is, does he have a trademark on the name or the recipe? You can't trademark a recipe.
Yeah.
You can't trademark a recipe. Now, if he just has a name on Chili Crisp, so what? You could call it a thousand different things. Just come up with a synonym for crispy, right? And you can call it something else. But I want to get Sebastian on. You're going to like him because I think you're going to pick his brain because you and I think the same way when it comes to business. But I want to get Sebastian on the podcast right now so we can just ask him some good, tough questions because this is the guy I go to for information.
All right, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to have Tyler's lawyer on the show. I hope he's not charging us by the minute. Stick around. You're listening to Two Dudes in the Kitchen.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. LeBron James.
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, Centratech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
Came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville.
So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
All right, welcome back to Two Dudes in a Kitchen. It's now Three Dudes in a Kitchen. We're kind of doing something a little bit different on the heels of this David Chang trademark issue that's going on all over social media. We thought we would start by bringing in someone who actually knows what the hell they're talking about. Tyler Florence has his trademark lawyer in the building right now. Sebastian, how are you, my friend?
Hey, how are you guys? Thanks for having me here with you today.
I hope that you're charging Tyler by the hour here for this.
No, absolutely not. I charge him enough for other things, so don't worry. No worries, Tyler.
But listen, it's worth every penny, because I think the intellectual copyright, the intellectual property that you create, is the real value in all this. And you and I talk about this all the time. Like, I can't remember exactly how many trademarks that you and I have, because we have a bunch. But this is part of being in business. If you create a concept, you got to lock down all the URLs, right? You got to lock down all the social media handles, and you have to file for a trademark for what it is, or anybody can just take your thing, right, Sebastian?
That's correct. Yeah. And you should, you should even go further than that. You should always plan in advance and probably, think big. I mean, are you just selling your products in the US now, but are you thinking about selling those products in Europe in the future? Because you should understand that trademarks are territorial in nature. So the fact that you may have a trademark registration in the US doesn't necessarily mean that you will have protection for the same trademark in China or in Europe or in Mexico or in Canada. And everything goes hand in hand. Like you mentioned URL, of course, you have to secure that domain name so you can have a website that is reflecting your services, where you can sell your products, and then social media, and most importantly, go and file your trademark application with the National Trademark Office, being that the United States, Canada, wherever you plan to sell your products or offer services in the near future.
So going through this real fast, and you and I got a chance to speak yesterday. David Chang is in an interesting position, and I don't know if I necessarily would want to be in this position, because like it's a 300 plus year old recipe for chili crisp, right? The documentation of this particular recipe goes back so far, and then there's variations regionally all throughout Southeast Asia for chilies and garlic. They also use this in Mexico. There's a chili crisp recipe in Mexico. So the question, Sebastian, does he have a trademark on the recipe, or does he have a trademark on the name Chili Crisp / Chili Crunch, or whatever he's calling it?
Yeah. Well, as matters stand today, and I was doing some research in advance, he does own a trademark registration for Chili Crunch, and he has recently filed, I will assume that in the wake of this dispute, a trademark application for Chili Crunch. So you may want to ask, what is exactly a trademark application, or what exactly is a trademark registration? A trademark registration is, like the title that the US government grants you and essentially tells you, you own that brand, you own that name for those particular products, in his case, condiments and so forth. And you, as the owner of that brand, have the ability to exclude others from using the same or a confusingly similar term for the same goods or even similar goods or related goods. So when you look at the records of the U.S. government, the U.S. Trademark Office, you can tell that he owns the trademark registration for Chili Crunch. Now, would that trademark registration withstand, an attack based on the mark being generic, the way that you describe the recipe for hundreds of years? That's something to be seen. I'm quite curious to see how this dispute evolves, and whether the parties resort to litigation or somehow settle this promptly before this goes to court.
Okay, let's talk about let's talk about defending a trademark, and I want to talk about it from both sides of it because I definitely see both sides of it. But okay, so let's just say you are Sebastian, you are representing a small independent condiment producer that makes a chili crisp, and then you just received a cease and desist letter from Mama Fuku and David Chang, and it probably feels a little scary because he's got some scratch. He can come after you, right? What do you do? Do you literally cease production, or do you think there's some leverage to go to fight that cease and desist letter?
Well, you know, the typical answer, it will depend on a case-by-case basis, right? But you would definitely would take this seriously, you know, like receiving a cease and desist letter is no joke. You know, you have to understand that there's liability attached to it. So you have to probably, if you get a cease and desist letter, get a trademark attorney to look into it. And, you know, that person will be in a position to study the facts, review the records of the U.S. government, you know, the U.S. trademark office, and will be able to guide you. You know, like this particular case, it's a tough one. You know, it's a gray area where, you know, you can tell, yeah, but it's been there that everybody has been referring to that, you know, to that ingredient as Chili Crunch for hundreds of years. And yet he's the first one to register it.
It kind of is what it is at that. I mean, it is what it is, right? I mean, if he was the first person to go, huh, no one's ever circled the wagons on that particular concept of that recipe, and it's starting to trend up, I'm going to own it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm
going to file a trademark for Chili Crisp and Chili Crunch, and I'm going to be the first person to do it.
Exactly. And interestingly, in reviewing the records, you know, that trademark registration for Chili Crunch wasn't actually his to begin with. You know, I haven't reviewed the records in detail, but it was owned by a different company that I would presume at some point they got into a dispute, and they ended up settling the dispute by one party acquiring the rights to the other, you know, and that's how he got those rights in Chili Crunch. And as I said, you know, before, he recently filed for Chili Crunch. Now, yeah, you know, the moment that you have a trademark registration granted by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, that's a very solid piece of evidence that you are the exclusive owner of the brand, and that you are entitled to exclude others from using the same term for the same goods. And this is the position where he is at this point in time. He owns the trademark, and until and unless someone goes ahead and challenge that trademark registration by filing a petition to cancel, that will remain active, and he will have all the rights to go and police and enforce his intellectual property.
Okay, so you're David Chang. Now we're on David Chang's side of the table, right? So you've got, you know, probably, you know, $10+ million invested in the scale up of Mama Fuku Chili Crunch, and you've got distribution in, you know, most major grocery stores across America, and you're doing $50 million in top line sales, and you're starting to notice that there's a bunch of copycats that are starting to come on the market, and you're like, yo, we did the right thing, right? So you can't hate the player, you got to hate the game. We did the right thing by filing a trademark application for Chili Crunch / Chili Crisp, whatever it is, right? And you didn't. So do something else, or we'll see in court. Is that something that you would go, would you do, or you recommend, or would you recommend trying to figure out how to settle with some of these people before you feel like you bankrupt them? Because that's the other side of it, right? I think that's like, you know, David Chang has always been like a chef of the people, and now he's kind of being like the bully of the people, especially some of these other smaller companies. But you're on David Chang's side of the table for this decision. What do you do?
Well, it's even beyond him, because legally you have a duty to police and enforce your trademarks. So what happened if you were to own that trademark and just sit there and let everybody use your trademark? Eventually, you will lose your trademark rights because
you'll lose the trademark. Common. Yeah, you'll lose the trademark. Right, exactly.
Exactly. So he has the duty to police and enforce it. Otherwise, anybody will come and say, hey, to the trademark office, say, there's this trademark registration. This is a common term. Everybody is using it. I know there's a trademark registration for it. owned by this party, but they're not doing anything to protect it, anything to enforce it. So why what's the reason for having that trademark registered with the USPTO? Let's cancel it. And so he's forced to take action, in a way. Now, how aggressive you want to be, that's something that you have to put, in balance and decide whether you want to be kind of like a, very aggressive, or you want to be more moderate and kindly request people to cease and desist from using the trademarks because he actually owns it. And that, that issue of how aggressive you want to enforce your trademark rights have come up a lot lately, because of social media and, how small companies now, exactly this case, are receiving cease and desist letter from the big players. And so instead of hiring an attorney, the first thing they do is they go to social media and, take a photo of the cease and desist letter, a very aggressive one, post it there. And, they start saying, look, this guy is, trying to aggressively enforce rights to a name he doesn't have any rights to, and so forth. And it may create a huge backlash for the
Like
trademark.
this is my grandmother's recipe, right? Like how dare you don't can't own my grandmother's recipe.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storr on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Johnny B. Goode, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, Centratech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
Came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Wells, how do you feel about this? Because you sent me a text about it. And I think this is a fabulous conversation. What side of the table are you on, Wells?
Listen, it's super interesting. And I come from the world of like, it's really important how you're perceived in the marketplace, right? Like, I'm on a reality TV show and I always want to be like looked at as a nice, loved person. And this is a way for you to become the villain, I suppose. What's interesting to me is I've done a little bit of research on it, is this whole kind of caveat of a trademark being quote unquote merely descriptive. And that's what a lot of people are saying that this trademark is, that this, you can't trademark something that's merely descriptive. And one, you know, there is some precedent with this as well. So Fly By Jing, which is a company that I've used before, they make a similar chili oil called Szechuan Chili Crisp, not Chili Crunch. And they applied for a trademark back in 2019, which the U.S. Patent Office denied. And I don't see the difference between Szechuan Chili Crisp and Chili Crunch. They are both the same thing. It's chili, and then it's describing what it is, which is either crispy or crunchy.
Yeah.
So now I think you're in the weeds of like, wait, hold on. Why did you get a trademark for this, but they didn't get a trademark for that? And I know, Sebastian, you are not a PR lawyer, but I imagine that you studied it when you had to take the bar and all that kind of stuff. Do you think, just in terms of being a lawyer, that this is worth the headache? Like, this is going to now sully his reputation as this man of the people cook. And I'm not sure if it's worth it just in terms of being able to hold the trademark.
But if that's your driver, okay, so you have a fiduciary obligation to not only yourself as the founder of the company, but to your investors, right? And if your Chili Crisp is your number one driver in a, you know, $100 million grocery brand, and he's diversified, he has soy sauces and he has miso.
Yeah, but what if this kills his sales?
But what if the encroaching competition that he clearly has the right to not have to compete with start to encroach his sales? It's like do you want to bleed from 1,000 cuts?
Yeah, I don't know. But I want to go back to the quote unquote merely descriptive part, because I think that's the most interesting to you. What is the distinction between Szechuan Chili Crisp and Chili Crunch to you, Sebastian? Because to me it seems like the same thing.
Well, actually, you know, what you're saying is quite right. You know, like in reviewing the records, you can see that there was an application that was refused as being merely descriptive. What, in essence, what it means is that they say, okay, listen, for chili, that's like generic. Chili is an ingredient. No one can own that. It has to be free for people to refer to it. If I want to sell a burger and someone gets a registration for a burger, then what am I going to use to refer to the burger? There's no other way, right? So that's what happens with merely descriptive. Now, for this trademark registration and for the one that was refused before, there's a disclaimer of the term chili, meaning that the owner of the trademark, in this case, David Chang, in the process of obtaining that trademark registration, they agreed that they will not claim exclusive rights over the term chili, right? Now, they were able to overcome that, and because they also found a merely descriptiveness refusal. The difference was that probably, one, they had a better attorney, and two, they resorted some technicalities, you know, and that's why it's important to have someone that knows the in and outs of the field. You know, you could overcome a merely descriptiveness refusal if you have used the trademark in commerce for more than 5 years. So at the time, the Chili Crunch received this merely descriptiveness refusal, he had been using the trademark for over 10 years. So it was relatively easy for them to say, okay, that's fine. It's not the most original trademark, but I have used this for more than 5 years and I have put a lot of money into it. And now no one has contested my rights. Now I am entitled to get this trademark registration. And that's exactly what happened. Now, with the other case, they didn't do it. Yeah. You know? They did receive the same, essentially the same merely discriminative refusal, but instead of challenging it, they just let it go. So the application was ultimately abandoned. So that's the difference, you know. One, yeah. They had someone that knew what they were doing, and probably the other one, they didn't know that much.
This is what I would do. I would fight the trademark. If I were David Chang, I'd fight the trademark because this is what it means to be in business, right? It's not always pretty, but you have investors you got to protect, and you have a product you got to protect. And then he just did the good hard work of protecting his concept, right? And then I would give the recipe away for free. So if you want to make this at home, let me show you how to make it, right? So then nobody can say, well, he's has a lock on it. Because if you give that recipe to 10 different people, 10 different people are going to make 10 different things. But you can always get the product at your local Whole Foods or whatever it is, or get it online. That's what I would do. I'd give the recipe away, and then I would lock out everybody else from owning that term.
There needs to be, you know, like a... We need to make like a distinction, you know. He's just claiming rights to the name, you know, to the brand, because probably someone else is using Chili Crisp or whatever. He's not claiming proprietary rights over the recipe, or at least, you know, not the millennia, you know, the recipe that's been there for 1,000 years or 100 years in China. So he just, you know, the issue here is not about like you cannot make this recipe, but the issue is you cannot use this trademark because that trademark is similar to mine or identical to mine. And that's where you are stepping into my territory.
You can have the recipe, but you can't have the name.
Exactly.
Well, it's going to be fascinating to see what happens with David going forward, what he decides to do just in terms of like, yeah, you're right. His board members, his investors, and then also his fans and his public opinion, because I think those are also very, kind of important things when it comes to business and selling stuff. Regardless, it's been a fascinating conversation. Sebastian, thank you so much for coming on Two Dudes in the Kitchen and is shedding some light into the world of trademarks. We appreciate you, and please send all billing to Tyler Florence Incorporated.
He's got my address.
Yeah, yeah. He knows
where to send the bill.
Yeah.
Thank you guys. Pleasure.
You're the best, dude. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you guys. All the best.
See you, Sebastian.
Thanks, man.
Well, very interesting conversation. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with David going forward. You know, it's a sticky thing. Like, you just don't want bad press as anyone who's in entertainment. And yeah. But I totally get it. You also want to make money. And especially if you've dumped a bunch of your own money or other people's money into it, you have to protect your, you know, your...
It is what it is, man. It is what it is, right? And sometimes it's not pretty. And I mean, we've had to send out these cease and desist letters. And we've also compromised with people before, too. A quick little story before... We bounce out of this one is Miller and Lux, right? So Miller and Lux was in, and Sebastian filed the trademark application for those things. I own the trademark for that, right?
Yeah.
And so that was a cattle company from the 1860s, but the trademark was abandoned in 1925. I happened to stumble across this fabulous story that where the Chase Center, where Miller and Lux sits right now, used to be the home headquarters for Miller and Lux. So it was just sort of serendipitous that we found this, and it happened to be in the same location where we technically built a great steakhouse. So I just refiled the trademark application and now get to tell their story. There's another company called Miller and Lux Wines, because the name Miller and Lux is actually quite famous. They're selling wine out of like Central Valley someplace. And I told them they could do it because they've been doing it for 10 years. Although I have the trademark for Miller and Lux Wine.
Yeah.
I let him do it. So, because I didn't want to, like, you know, me coming out of nowhere and to your point, Wells, it's all about the public perception of what you do. Right. So I'm selling Miller and Lux wine and so are they, and I'm not, and they can't challenge mine. And I'm not going to challenge theirs. If somebody else jumps in the marketplace, this is a whole different thing, but I felt like, I think there's give and take and all this kind of stuff, but I think you do have to protect your creativity.
Your IP, right? Too. Yeah.
You got to check. You have to protect your intellectual property.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting conversation. If you guys have some thoughts, please hit us up on Instagram at Two Dudes in the Kitchen. Send a DM, or I'm sure we'll have a clip of this that you can comment on. And I doubt this is going to be the last time we talk about it. We're out of here. But when we come back in just a couple of days, we're going to be talking all about restaurant etiquette. And we'll be talking to Sarah Jane Ho, who has a new book out called Mind Your Manners, and also she's on Netflix as well. It's going to be a very interesting conversation, so you better mind your P's and Q's. We'll see you next time on Two Dudes in a Kitchen.
All right, guys, thanks for listening. Follow us on Instagram at Two Dudes in a Kitchen. Make sure to write us a review and leave us 5 stars.
We'll take that, and we'll see you guys next time.
See you next time.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Minnie Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Minnie Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Pitbull.
I think that education is the real revolution, because as much as we speak about all the problems that there is in society and the world today, my mother's always told me, son, don't worry, the world's always been coming to an end. Don't let it scare you out of living.
Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.